Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thank you for being here. Really appreciate you showing up. So, what is this show about? I think primarily what I want to push is this idea of unconditional love, of non-needing love, of not deficit love, to go into these logotherapy terms. But what does it mean to be completely involved in what we're doing? What does it mean to be completely present in our activity that we're working on right now? Like right now, I'm speaking into a microphone, and my mind keeps going on these little mind trips about these things that I might want to talk about. But it's the most perfunctory and the best speaking if I speak right here and now. Isn't that weird? Without any sort of planning, but it just comes. That's why I like doing this, really. And I think there's a lot of different ways that we can be involved in what we're doing. And for some reason, I relate that to this concept of love. Because when we're involved in our activity, I think we start to love it, if that makes any sense. And this might be my own opinions. But still, I want to push people towards wanting to be more present in whatever the hell they are doing. There might not be a guarantee on what that is, you know? And then I also want people to be curious. I want people to think about what it is that excites them. When it comes to being involved, we're also involved with the stories that we tell ourselves and that we tell other people about who we are. And in a way, our lives are these creative art projects because we're perpetually putting on these new personality tropes to everybody to describe who we are. And a lot of the times, I find myself very attached, I guess would be the best word, attached to my words that I use in conversation. You know, and when I say something, there's a pointed reason for it to be said. And I want to provide the space for any and every person to have that ability to do that for themselves. Even though I do believe wholeheartedly that beyond all of these personality tropes that we clothe ourselves with is something deeper and much more omnipresent, this eternal witness of some sort that's always just watching the whole game go. But we have to play the game, and that's what makes it joyful. And that's what allows us the ability to show love and to just become as involved as we can in this whole thing. So that's what my show's about. That's why I'm here. This week I wanted to talk about something that I have absolutely no experience with. It's something that I've been practicing recently, but I still think it's very important. And it's this idea of setting boundaries. And why do we need boundaries? And this is something that I really didn't start realizing for myself. And I would always push myself too hard and give too much to people. And then, because I had no boundaries in action. And then I would burn out, and then I would have these outrageous reactions back upon these people. But it had nothing to do with what they did, because it's just all about my energy output and what I decided to do, you know? And so recently I've been trying to figure out what I need to do to take care of myself. And part of that has been realizing that I'm incredibly introverted and I need a lot of quiet space and a lot of quiet time. It's very important to me to have alone time. And when I was younger, I was addicted to socializing because my identity was in my friend groups, which I think is a completely normal response for human beings, especially at that time period, is we get to a position where our social groups become almost completely who we are. And then I think we identify a lot with that. And then as we grow and we age, we start to form our own habits. And a lot of people do that younger too. And a lot of people are just introverted younger, you know, and I don't think anybody's completely introverted or extroverted. I think we're all an even blend and depending on the time period. But, you know, figuring out what I can and can't do for people, right? And last week, I straight up told a friend who wanted to come over on a weekend day, I told him that I needed a day to myself. And that's something that I have rarely done. I've always been such a yes man that figuring out how to say no makes me uncomfortable. And I knew I had to do it for myself, and it was a very good thing to take that day and have that peace and quiet, just like I have right now. Like nobody's in my house right now except for my son, and he's yelling in the background. I'm sure you've heard him a little bit. But being able to close my door and be in a quiet room is like a breath of fresh air. And yesterday, the same friend came over because this weekend I did give him the opportunity to come in. And I decided to eat some mushrooms yesterday, and I decided to give him some. And on the come up, I realized strongly that I didn't want to socialize. You know, all I wanted to do was go sit in my room. And very rare occurrence, I just spoke up and I said, hey, getting a little high right now. I'm going to go sit by myself for a little bit. I'll be back in like an hour or two. And it was such a relief just to make that decision for myself and to make the space and the quiet, right? So mainly, I'm attempting to bring some awareness, and by speaking about it, this continues to reinforce my own practice towards self-focus and trying to grow and trying to take care so that I can help take care of others. It's this lifeguard analogy, lifeguard, because if we can't swim, there's absolutely no reason to go run into the water and try to save somebody, and we both drown. Now, I've been watching a lot of these videos on Facebook. I don't know if you've seen, there's this like bomb cyclone is what they call it that hit the Earth, some hemisphere. I don't know. I didn't look too far into it, but massive fucking waves have been hitting all over different parts of the world, and a lot of them have been hitting California. Like huge swells have been coming in at high tide and like flooding like houses and shit. Like, and like you see huge waves hit people. And then lots of other like videos of people free diving off of cliffs into bad spots where waves are just hitting rocks and they can't get out because they get pulled back and forth. You know, like there's a lot of situations where we overextend and we try to help somebody. And in the end, we end up harming ourselves, which ends up harming our friend or the person that we're trying to help. And so there's a reasonable and mature way to go about it where we're just strategic about it. And I've just been falling short on that for so long, where I've vacillated between giving just way too much and not giving enough. And I'm in a position where I'm trying to look for advice because I'm a newbie here. I'm a novice when it comes to this right now. So if you'd like to reach out to the email address, that's thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com, which is easily available in the show notes. We can have a discussion about your own boundary settings and situations in your life where you feel that you've needed to step back and retain and sacrifice sociability for your own self-care. These are all big words that have been ringing through my head because I was just reading about them in my Ram Dass book, and that's renunciation, sacrifice, Renunciation is mindfully restricting behaviors for one's own conscious development, kind of. I know there's a lot of buzzy spiritual hoodoo-y kind of bullshit, so I'm gonna try to break that down a little bit. But it's like, but if you've been following the show, you know that I have been steadily trying to lower my THC intake because I've been a fucking pothead for most of my life. And my primary motivation is not abstinence. It's just to prove that I have any degree of self-control. My aspirations for wanting to have less chemicals in my body, especially marijuana, is just simply because I want to say I can. And I still want to smoke pot at some point in the day. I just don't want to be smoking pot all day long because I feel like I have to, you know? And I have heard from people who have been able to redefine their relationship with marijuana. And marijuana can be a beautiful thing. So what I'm doing right now is I'm practicing tapasya. I'm practicing this renunciation of this desire system that I've reinforced and maintained for over 10 years, 16 years now, more than half my life. And that's a spiritual practice. And Ram Dass says that when you're truly renunciating something, it doesn't feel like you're pulling teeth. You know, a lot of people will fast bitterly, or like, you know, when somebody quits smoking, and this is something I do all the time, where I'll tell people, like, I haven't smoked anything like fucking 3 weeks, 4 hours, 16 minutes, like you have it to the day. There's still a position in your brain that is firmly held in the grip of nicotine or whatever it is that you're still talking about when you're considering how long it's been. So like true renunciation is when you spiritually come to a point where you realize that this thing has taken up way too much space and it's not who you are. And so now you're letting it go. And you can do that with food. You know, like I need to desperately work on my renunciation of shit food and sugar. And so I've been trying to drink a lot less soda, you know, but I'm not trying to do anything with too much effort, because if I try too hard, which is why I could never be abstinent. If I were to be to say I'm going to be sober now and I'm never going to touch anything unhealthy for my body ever again, I'm fucking myself because I can't do it. And so it has to be this natural feeling where you lean into that joy that naturally exists in your heart, I believe. And when you feel it, you realize that you don't need the sugar, or you don't need the cigarette, and you don't need all these things because they're not making you happy anyways. The true joy exists in your heart. And so there's the separation of technique here, where one is really anxious striving for, I don't want this stuff in my body, I'm quitting this cold turkey. And then there's a soft way of renunciating all these extra baggage things that are no longer required. And when you drop it, it feels wonderful. And that's how I always felt about cigarettes, because I would never quit cigarettes out of by white knuckle bearing pressure. When I quit smoking, it was always because of a physical duress, because I felt like ass. And so I would get to a point mentally where I didn't want to feel like shit anymore. I didn't want to wake up, you know, feeling like I had cancer every morning. And so it was an easy decision not to want to feel like shit. And so when I stopped doing it, I started feeling better. You know, it wasn't hard. You know, it was much more difficult for me to get into a mental space where I could approach marijuana that way, though, because of all the different ways I was using it, so that I didn't have to use my own willpower and my own joy systems. You see what I'm saying? So like, Ram Dass would say that as soon as you catch yourself trying too hard and it's coming too much of an effort, just fuck it, wait. And I agree. It's just like sleep. You know, if you're trying way too hard to go back to sleep, get up out of bed, walk around for a little bit, go to a different room, watch a 20-minute TV show and try again later. Like, it's the same with DMT sometimes, man. Like, so many times I've tried to smoke DMT and if you have too much expectations, she's really good at not giving you any candy. So I've always had to approach with this whimsical spontaneity where I have to like sideline myself so I don't expect it. And all too often, if I try too hard with too much effort, it doesn't fucking work. yeah. But just stuff to think about. Sacrifice is when we give up things and we give it to something else. So one of the most devotionary things I could think of, which is bhakti yoga, devotionary yoga. The most devotionary thing you can do is be a good parent. It's when you're selflessly loving your kid, even though they piss you off so bad. And you're writhing around in anger, but you still love them. That's devotion. That's sacrifice. And so taking your suffering and your struggling and your hardship in life and then giving it up to something else. Like, I'm working so hard for my son. You know, that's devotion. I'm working so hard for God. That's devotion. I'm working so hard for this human species because I hope that my effort's going to make our species a little bit better. That's devotion. But not doing it exactly for yourself or the little self, the personality's whimsy and the way that the personality desires things ought to be, if you hear my drift. So sacrifice is taking it out of your hands and giving it up to somebody else. There's a lot of, you give it to anybody. It doesn't matter. Give it to the homeless person on the street. Here, I'm having a bad day, man. I'm sorry. You know, but I'm going to give it up so I can be happy to you and give you love and attention, even though I'm feeling like shit. That's devotion, right? It's not like it exists real enough that when you give it up, it makes the other feel that. That's not how it works. Oh, good God. I've tied myself up in knots here, and this is the consequences of reading a lot of weird Hindu stuff. All right, I'm getting close to the end of my drift. I want to go back to something towards the beginning. We were talking about boundary setting, and I do think that boundary setting has something to do with this idea of renunciation. When we renunciate the good feelings we get from social outgoings, like, or, you know, going out and doing stuff makes you feel good, but if you don't have enough energy to do it, but there's a way we lean on the activity socially to lift ourselves up. So in a way we could become addicted to social pressures just like any other drug or activity, you know, and we could turn a person into a negative thing where they should just be an outlet for love, right? So there's this connection I see between renunciation and boundary setting. And sacrifice directly, you know, when we are, the devotionary center is the inner self and our own, that own kernel that we're trying to take care of our own peace so that we can maintain and continue to become stronger for everybody. That's a sacrifice. But that's when we start to realize the God that's inside our own heart. But, you know, so I think it all ties together. I didn't want it to feel like it was just split there. I wanted to make sure it was neat and cool. All right, I'm gonna go find a book real quick and then we'll go see what Odin's doing and I'll let you go for the week. So I appreciate your time so much. It means the world to me that you give me your ear and you give me your attention. And if you made it, you know, 19 minutes of the way through my bullshit and all my rambling, it means a lot to me. And I just want you to know that you mean a lot to me, and that the reason I do this is for you. And I want to be a friend, and I want to be a helper. I want to be an ally. I want to be present somehow. So like, that's why I make this, is to try to relate and to make something that hopefully can bring somebody into a space where they see how connected they are to everything else and how normal it all is, how incredibly normal all of our plights and all of our highs and lows and all the funny things and the sarcastic things that happen in life, you know, how fucking normal it all is, man. And I'm right here with you, and we're all in this basket of stuff. And it's kind of crazy that it works, isn't it? It's kind of amazing how all these weird things work together. So you're a lovely being, and I'm really glad that I'm here with you. I'll be right back. First, I'm going to read from Bertrand Russell. This is an essay called A Free Man's Worship. And honestly, there's a lot of dark shit right before this, but I like this little bit. I liked how he expressed purpose, and he hints towards love. We'll see what you think. United with his fellow men by the strongest of all ties, the tie of common doom, the free man finds that a new vision is with him always, shedding over every daily task the lights of love. The life of man is a long march through the night, surrounded by invisible foes, tortured by weariness and pain, towards a goal that few can hope to reach, and where none may tarry long. One by one as they march, our comrades vanish from our sight, seized by the silent orders of omnipotent death. Very brief is the time in which we can help them, in which their happiness or misery is decided. Be it ours to shed sunshine on their path, to lighten their sorrows by the balm of sympathy, to give them the pure joy of never-tiring affection, to strengthen failing courage, to instill faith in hours of despair. Let us not weigh in grudging scales their merits and demerits, but let us think only of their need, of the sorrows, the difficulties, perhaps the blindnesses that make the misery of their lives. Let us remember that they are fellow sufferers in the same darkness, actors in the same tragedy with ourselves. And so when their day is over, when their good and their evil have become eternal by the immortality of the past, be it ours to feel that where they suffered, where they failed, no deed of ours was the cause, but wherever a spark of a divine fire kindled in their hearts, we were ready with encouragement, with sympathy, and with brave words in which high courage glowed. Yeah. I'm generally more optimistic, I feel, but there's beauty there. Next, this is chapter 66 of Ursula K. Le Guin's Tao Te Ching. Low down. Lakes and rivers are lords of the hundred valleys. Why? Because they'll go lower. So they're the lords of the hundred valleys. Just so, a wise soul, wanting to be above other people, talks to them from below. And to guide them, he follows them. And so the wise soul predominates without dominating, and leads without misleading, and people do not get tired of enjoying and praising one who, not competing, has in all the world no competitor. And then Ursula's beautiful commentary. She says, one of the things I love in Lao Tzu is his good cheer, as in this poem, which while giving good counsel in itself a praise and enjoyment of the spirit of yin, the water soul that yields, follows, eludes, and leads on, dancing in the hundred valleys. Such a beautiful book. I encourage you to go get one. And if you email me, I'll fucking buy you one and mail you one, I promise. It's one of my favorite books. It's so potent. Oh man, this hits me every time. I'm gonna go grab a, be right back, again.
Hello guys, it's me and the gingerbread man, Asko.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Why are you so big now?
Not really.
You're huge.
No, I'm not. What do you mean I'm huge?
You're big and massive.
What do you mean?
You're just huge.
No, I'm not. Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Do you have anything cool to talk about?
No.
You have to have something.
No.
Are you back at school?
Yes.
How's that make you feel?
Good.
Why?
I don't know.
What's your favorite part about being back in school?
Learning.
Learning what?
Math.
Math? What's your favorite kind of math? Tell me about it.
Multiplication by zero, by one and zero.
Whoa, you're gonna be doing calculus next week.
Calculus?
Calculus.
What's a calculus?
College math.
college, Matt. What do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for giving me your time, Otto.
Yeah.
Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.